This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone. My name is Logan, and that, of course, means you're listening to another episode of The Crown Cast, and we have opinions, ladies and gentlemen. The day has come. Charlotte FC has destroyed, obliterated Toronto at the bank, as we do to all teams who come to the bank, because in the bank, we have our fortress. We are invincible, and we have strong opinions about how people work in the fortress, and here to have those strong opinions with me is Josh. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Logan.
And not here to have strong opinions with us is Ewan. Sadly, Josh, we're missing Ewan for this one.
I know. Feeling like we're going to have to lift the show without him, which is a hard ask because he does carry us a lot of the time.
Most of the time, I get the chance to really not say anything important. I get to just sort of babble on, and I don't have to be particularly intelligent, because when the intelligent stuff needs to happen, I can just pass it to Ewan.
Yeah.
Today, I'm going to have to do the work.
Yeah, I'm still just going to give out random numbers and then wait for other people to make sense of it.
Well, we have talked about the fact that today has a couple of strong opinions included in it. And at this point in time, even if Ewan has strong opinions, his opinions don't matter. Let's start with the Tui Loma thing. The internet wants to hear Tui Loma. I guess that's what we're going to start with. You ready to put on the boxing gloves?
Yeah, I love talking Tui Loma.
Hashtag talking Tui Loma. If you are one of our Patreon members and you've seen the Discord shenanigans that have gone on around Tui Loma, you've already been through these wars, so we're putting you through them again. Words are hard. If you're not a Discord member, if you're not a Patreon member and you'd like to be so, you can find us on Patreon.com/TheCrownCast. We'd love to have you. Tui Loma has divided opinion. Divided might be a strong word. I think Tui Loma has become a figurehead of a very negative opinion at Charlotte FC. And some of it I personally feel is deserved, and some of it I feel is not deserved. He had a really rough year last year when he came in, and he struggled in a system that was not defensively very sound to begin with. I think you could have put a lot of very good defenders in that system, and they would have found struggles. I think we have to preface everything we say with that fact. Josh, do you agree with that?
Yeah. I think just in general, last year was hard. He was brought in very close to the beginning of the season and just sort of thrown in there. And it wasn't an ideal situation, I don't think, for the club, obviously, with, you know, the tragic death of Anton Walkes. It wasn't a great situation for Bill Tui Loma because, you know, you have to remember he is also moving across the country. And then he is, again, just being thrown into a team that, with or without him, had defensive deficiencies.
Yeah. All of that stuff being said, a lot of the negative opinion from Bill Tui Loma came from the fact that he was purchased and acquired to be a stick-on ready, MLS experienced, no warm-up required, should be able to come in and do a serviceable job, no mistakes, no drastic problems, maybe not the best defender in the world, but should have been proven in this league, and came in and really looked rough. Some time has passed, and he has spent some time out of the team. Obviously, we've moved to the Adilson Milanda and the Andrew Privet role, and this is his first time under Dean Smith getting time on the field. Josh, do you think it's fair to say that when the news came out that it was going to be Bill starting, the general reaction was negative?
Yeah, I think the general reaction was negative, even though I think most people also anticipated that it would be him, because that's the other kind of thing about this team. If you look at it, we don't have a ton of experienced options at that position. I think the only other sort of option that I thought might happen is if you moved Andrew Privet over to that right-sided center back and maybe brought in JP to play the left. But I think you also have to remember that Privet is so new to this position that sometimes you don't want to make four changes to a team to accommodate one change, right?
Yes, sometimes the answer is do less math.
Yeah.
Although, one thing I want to talk about really quickly, just because it's popped into my head, is it time that we start addressing Andrew Privet as an established central defender who shouldn't be getting excuses for anything anymore? I mean, he's been in that position a while.
I mean, in my opinion, I think we can, I don't consider him a midfielder playing as a center back, but I do consider him to be a new center back. And so for me personally, he is doing something which I think is incredibly hard, which is learning a new position at the highest level for this country, right? And so I still think that that is something to keep in mind, at least for, in my opinion, at least for this year. I think after this year, he's now a center back. There is no, well, he's new to the position, right? But I think you've kind of seen a jump in his play from last year to this year because he is more comfortable there. And I think that there's still a little something to that because he just doesn't have the experience. And that is a position, honestly, that I think you need a lot of experience. We talk all the time about how weird it is that Adilson Milanda is as good as he is because he's so young for that position. And so I don't want to take that away from what Andrew Privet's doing.
That's absolutely fair. I want to go ahead and state for the record that I am of a probably lower opinion on Bill Tuiloma than some people may be. But I also think to an extent I'm a much higher opinion than perhaps the general fan base is, in that I still think Bill Tuiloma is a capable defender who can play a role for Charlotte FC. At the same time, I really don't like seeing Bill Tuiloma's name on the starting team sheet, especially when it comes to the position he ended up playing in this particular match. Let me explain. Bill Tuiloma has a couple of skills that I actually think are really quite impressive. His long ball distribution, especially over the top, when he's not trying to keep the ball low, he's trying to send the ball over to someone, is extraordinary. It's really quite good. And I think Dean Smith did a good job of making use of that distribution in this system. Against Toronto, I think that ability he had shown through, and we got to see it. But in the position he's in, which is Adilson Milanda's, he is inherently having to take over some of the things that I think are not his strengths as a defender. Number one, being his aerial dominance. And aerial dominance is a hysterical thing to say, because aerially, he has no dominance. He wins almost no aerial duels. And again, not a young man, we understand, but aerial presence has never been his specialty. We almost entirely rely on Adilson Milanda for that at Charlotte FC. Not that Andrew Privet can't do it, but he's not special at it. So bringing in Bill Tuiloma into that position immediately says, well, if we're not going to change our system that much, Bill, you're responsible for the over-the-top stuff. Good luck. On top of that, when we do push forward into the field, when we press up, the person who's responsible for the duels running backwards is Adilson Milanda. Bill Tuiloma, not an extraordinarily good defender when he's running backwards in a duel for his own goal. Whereas when Adilson Milanda does that, we just go, oh yeah, it's Adilson Milanda, it's going to be fine. My heart rate gets quieter when Adilson is running backwards in a duel. When Bill Tuiloma is, it's just panic, right? So there are elements to Bill Tuiloma's game that I do think are good and useful. And unfortunately, I think that him trying to slot into the right side of our defense was really the wrong place for him. It just is not going to let him shine. It's putting pressures on him that he, as a player, have never been particularly capable of managing. And Josh, the one I think we're going to get to when we start talking about goals and things is Bill Tuiloma is rusty. He's been on the bench. He hasn't played live minutes for a long time. And he was ending up as the person who had to make the critical decisions and made some of them wrong.
Sure.
So now that I have both tried to hype him up and also, tear him down, your opinions on Bill Tuiloma before we start talking about all the things that people are going to be referencing around him.
So I think people are going to hear my takes on this, and the reaction is going to be he is a Bill Tuiloma supporter and defender, and he wants Bill Tuiloma. I want to be very clear. I am higher on Bill Tuiloma than I think the majority of fans are. But I view him strictly as a squad depth piece. Specifically, I think in an ideal scenario, he is probably like our fourth choice center back, maybe third. I think he's serviceable as a third choice center back. I would also say that I think Bill is probably better suited for a system that employs three at the back, where he has a little bit more defensive cover and some of those qualities you were talking about, such as like his distribution, can come into play a little bit more. This is not a, I am not a Bill Tuiloma should be a starter for Charlotte FC fan. What I am, though, is I am someone who I think he is serviceable. And I think it is hard, especially in this league, and especially with the way this organization has run so far, to find experienced guys in this league to be a squad piece. We don't have that, and I think that that does add something to us. Could we upgrade on Bill Tuiloma? Absolutely. Should we? Absolutely. But if Bill Tuiloma, in my opinion, is your third or fourth center back, I don't think that that is necessarily a problem. I do also agree with you that I don't know. I think the bigger question is this system, since he's gotten here, really, ever really fit his skill set? And so are we asking him to do things that are just not in his wheelhouse? And that's a question you kind of can't answer necessarily. But I think it's a really pertinent question to consider.
So let me shoot some numbers at you, Josh. You love numbers.
Yeah, I do.
Numbers are fun, right?
Yes.
I have, the reason I'm comfortable with having Bill Tuiloma in our squad is I actually think he's a reasonably good depth option for the left side of central defense. The current job of Andrew Privet, who, as we know, is a midfielder moved to central defense. If you look at the numbers, the percentile numbers, these are just the bars that you can find online, right? Aerials won bottom 22nd percentile, which is atrocious for a central defender. It's real bad. Clearances, bottom 12th percentile. Atrocious. Actually atrocious. Blocks, bottom 12th percentile. Tackles, bottom 6th percentile. So all of that stuff, I think we can agree, pretty bad. Interceptions, he's in the 80th percentile. He's very good at predicting the play coming at him and cutting out problems. He's, if he was able to do what we are currently expecting of Andrew Privet, when Andrew Privet moves up into that sort of like diamond defensive shape and cut balls out and cut out danger, I would love that. And I think, you know, this isn't just numbers talking. Go back and watch the game. You can see him, the way his mind thinks. If he's ahead of the game, he's a good defender. It's when he's equal with the game, when he can't think ahead, when he has to react, that we see him really struggle. The other thing that, this is a very minor annoyance, but it is a annoyance, is that lack of aerial ability and that lack of dominance in a space translates to set plays up the field. When you push your center backs up to go and potentially make a play on the opponent's goal, he really isn't going to give you anything. It shows through. He's in the bottom 29th percentile for non-penalty XG and XA off of those things. Now, what we talked about before, his ability to throw those balls over the top, he's in the 73rd progressive passes. He has skills, and it is just going to be a matter of, can Charlotte take advantage of those? If you want to make any comments on the stats, feel free, Josh, but otherwise we move in.
Just simply that I think this is one of those times where the numbers match the eye test in a lot of ways. I think you're right. I think a lot of the deficiencies that you see with your eyes are matched in those stats. And again, I think it goes to our further point that we've both been kind of making, which is, are we asking Bill Tuiloma to do something that he is able to do? Or are we expecting him to evolve his game at, as a, what is he, 27, 28 years old defender?
I want to say, you know, he's older than that.
He might be. Regardless, the point is, again, are we asking him to do things that he can do, or are we trying to get him to do things that he is just simply never going to be able to do? And then, you know, whose fault is that, really, I guess, would be my question.
Yeah, I have, so I did go and look it up. He was born March 27th, 1995. He is 29 years old, so he just turned 29. But ultimately, I think the question on Bill Tuilomo, before we go and talk about whether or not everything is his fault in this game, because that's going to be this whole episode, is was literally everything Bill Tuilomo's fault? COVID, Bill Tuilomo's fault. So, this is a guy who I think the greater question is, why is he in your bench? Why is he in your depth piece? And if he's in, for me, if he's in your bench, if he's a depth option because he fits the specific role of moving the ball out of defense and being a destroyer that steps up, great. I think he fits that role. I think what a lot of people see with their eye test and feel very strongly is if he is on your bench to be the catch-all defensive rock, he's just not that. He is just not the catch-all defensive rock. And if what Charlotte is looking for him to be is a catch-all defensive rock, they need to go elsewhere. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the first thing that's definitely Bill Tuilomo's fault. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Their first goal against us is a bit of a, we're going to call it a mistake masterclass. As with most things in football, goals don't usually come from one error. They come from a series of errors that ultimately result in one critical error. And in this one, I think Bill's going to get a lot of flack because he is the one who, in my opinion, makes the critical error. But you don't necessarily see it that way. You want to walk us through how you see it?
Yeah. So with this goal, you have a ball in from Bernadeschi first that is, in my opinion, poorly dealt with by Andrew Privet. Privet gets the ball back out, but it's one of those things where I want my defender to either control that ball and do something with it or kick it into the stands and have everyone reset, because it's a little bit of a transitional moment. And so as a central defender, for me, and especially with the way we've been playing defensively, just get that ball clear. Let's get us reset. That doesn't happen. It falls back to Bernadeschi, who then starts to cut in on his right foot, like I think most of the time you can expect him to. His right foot is what has, you know, got him to the levels that he's at. Then you have, in my opinion, another mistake where Urinen, for me, is not aggressive enough in closing down the space with Bernadeschi. That is also probably a little bit of a personality thing that I have, where I want my defenders to be a little bit more aggressive in that. I don't know what they're being told to do in those type of situations, but I would prefer that space to be closed down a little bit harder so that he doesn't have as much time on the ball. He does have time, though. The ball comes in, it's deflected off of Urinen, and it falls to the feet of Prince, who toe pokes it, scuffs it, I don't really know, just sort of redirects it, and it rolls about as slowly as you'll see a goal, a ball roll into the goal. And in the midst of all that, you had Bill Tuilomo, who looks like he is trying to play an offside trap, and he is about a half a second too late in doing that. Prince is definitively onside, and once Bill steps forward, he's not able to get back on the right side of Prince to get a deflection off of that ball, prevent it from going into him. When I looked at this goal, I had problems sort of across the board with the way we defended it. And then I personally think that the deflection is a very big part of this goal that is really helpful. And sometimes those things just happen. Bill is not, he is culpable in this. I'm not, again, this is not me trying to say Bill has no fault in this. This is just, when I looked at this goal, I'm kind of evenly distributing the blame sort of across the board. I also have questions as to what Colleen is doing. I guess he gets caught flat-footed. But I mean, that ball achingly, like slowly rolls across his goal. And it felt like a goal that in many different points we could have prevented.
So this is the one that I am probably more willing to go. I say probably. This is definitely the one that I'm more willing to go two-footed into Tuilomo on, mostly because I really don't think he had a significant number of terrible plays besides this one. I think for me, this is the big one where I look at and say, I expect Bill Tuiloma to do better. You are absolutely correct. The ball should have been dealt with, which is a theme of this whole game, that we should have dealt with the pressure that Toronto was putting on us in a million different ways, including Christian Kolina, who I gave a card to, because Kolina had plenty of options to sweep up pressure and didn't come out and own his six. But either way, once we get to the point where Bill Tuiloma is that last man, he has set himself a half body length behind the rest of the line, because he is the leader of the line. He is the one who sets it. He is the one who decides where it sits. He is the one who controls it. And also, he is the one with the responsibility, which you'll notice we talked about earlier, is not necessarily his strong suit, with the responsibility to go, and if an offside trap is going to be played, he is the one that has to execute it. He does it wrong. It is as simple as that. And for me, I can look at it and I can say, I understand why you've done it. I understand when you thought the pass was going to come in, because Bernadeschi is very good and capable of getting it in from where he was. I understand why you went for this action. It is everything about the process is okay, but ultimately you chose the wrong path. And when you are the last defender on your 6-yard box, if you choose the wrong path, they score. That's just kind of the way it is. That's the pressure that some people will say unfairly gets put on defenders. But that's the job, right? The only person who has a more heavy pressure mistake generated place in the game is the goalkeeper himself. Because if the goalkeeper makes a mistake, they definitely score. I think that what happens, not to excuse Christian Kolina, because like I said, he was rough in this game. I think what happens is that Christian Kolina thinks he is going to run with Prince, because Bill Tuiloma has Prince in a body shape where if he wants to receive that ball, keep in mind, at the time everybody moves, it hasn't deflected yet. So everyone is playing based on what could be happening. He has Prince in a body shape where if Prince is going to receive that ball, Prince's back is going to be towards goal with Bill Tuiloma in his back. It would have been incredibly difficult to turn from that position. And even if he did get something off, it would have had to gone through Bill Tuiloma and then through Christian Kolina. I think Kolina says, yep, he's right in front of him. He sees him running. And then Bill Tuiloma makes the decision to step up. Neither one of them is excusable, right? Like, neither one of them is with no fault here. But ultimately what happens is one man stays back and one man steps up and the guy in the middle goes, ooh, I'm free, and scores.
Yeah.
So I think that when you look at something like that, you're looking at a player and saying, did you make the right decision? Not was your action, not was the technique wrong, or in that circumstance, a player who hasn't played in like a year, real minutes, right? Even if it is a critical error in the goal, we probably have to look at it and say, you know what? Nobody's perfect. And you're rusty as heck. So I don't love it. I think he can do better, and I hope in that situation in the future he does better, and I wish he had done better in that one. But I do probably put the majority of this one on Bill Tuiloma, and by majority, I'm not talking 99%. I'm talking like 60%. Josh, you wanna fire back at me there?
This is all about, I think, where you divvy up this blame, so to speak. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm giving the majority of the goal to Tuiloma, but I think I'm distributing the blame to a lot more people than a lot of everyone else is. So for me, and these numbers are not going to add up because I'm just taking them off the top of my head. For me, it's probably Bill at like 40-ish%. But I'm probably giving Urinen and Privet and Kolina, I'm probably splitting whatever is left, that 60%, amongst them in some way. Because again, I do think Privet, I have a real issue with the way Privet does not clear that ball, right? Like for me, Bill is most responsible, but I am looking at Privet in that moment. I'm saying, if you just put your foot through that ball, none of the rest of this action happens. And, you know, yes, it's a little bit awkward, I think, for Privet. He's running back. It's coming at him fast. I get all of that. But that's where I'm coming at this from. Yes, Bill, I agree with you. Bill makes the wrong decision. I think we can point to it and say, like, he is to blame for this goal. It's just I'm just not ready to say that this is a, quote, Bill Tuiloma goal, end quote, which I think is the way it's been labeled. Am I being too nice to him? Perhaps. Is there a reason for that? I have no idea. I just know that that's the way I feel in this moment. And, you know, so maybe.
Let me hit you with a final question for this, and then we'll move on. If that's a Deilson Malanda, do you think he steps up there and leaves the man empty?
Oof. I think if a Deilson Malanda, no, I think a Deilson Malanda probably tries to be a little bit more physical in that moment. I think if he does make the decision that Tuiloma does, I think because of how much he's played, Malanda is more likely to have gotten it right.
Yeah.
And I will also say that Malanda is just a different body type. He's a better defender, but a different body type. And what I mean by that is he's taller, he's longer limbed, right? Tuiloma is not far off of even having made that mistake of getting his foot in the way of that ball that comes into Prince. My gut says that if everything happens the way it does, but with Malanda, I think Malanda's leg intercepts that ball just barely. But no, I probably think that if Malanda's playing, that goal is not scored. And if it is, it's scored in a very different way. But again, I don't think that that's too much. As we've been saying, can you really blame Tuiloma for not being as good as Adilson Malanda? As the starting center back who everyone since he's made his debut has basically been waiting for the day that he returns to Europe in some form, right? So like that's the other thing with this. We have a really, really good defender in Malanda, so I think we're taking a step or a step and a half down, no matter who the backup is.
Yeah, and it does make the image of Bill Tuiloma that much sharper in contrast.
Yes.
Because we're going from someone who is such a high floor player
mm-hmm.
to someone who, it feels really harsh to say, Bill Tuiloma's ceiling might be lower than Adilson Malanda's floor, but the truth is they might be, right?
I think that's fair. I mean, again, and this goes back to the point. I don't think anyone is arguing for Bill Tuiloma to be a starter for this team. I think where the difference of opinion is, do you see any value to Bill? I think we do in some capacity, but, you know, I do understand how his mistakes with this team have sort of burned a lot of bridges in people's minds.
Yeah, so after all of that discussion, I think we can all agree Bill Tuiloma's garbage. Get him out of our club. Throw out the trash, everything. Throw it all out.
And that I am the president of the Bill Tuiloma fan club. Yes.
Because in the end, ultimately on the internet, if you are 51% on one side, you are actually the chairman and captain of that extreme.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's just the way it works. Let's go ahead. You have on here a note that I'm going to ask you if you want to continue with. And it says, quote unquote, the hater goal. Would you like to do this or should we skip ahead?
I would love to do this because there's not really much to talk about other than our first goal is scored by two of the most hated players by this fan base or involves two of the most hated players on this roster, along with a third who came into this season really loved, but kind of was annoying people with his early season play. Because our first goal is scored when Bill Tuiloma sends a long ball out that gets headed down a little fortuitously by Enzo Capetti that falls to the feet of Kerwin Vargas, who has a great finish to give us the lead. And I call it the hater goal because, man, if you are on team no Enzo, no Bill, no Vargas, you probably threw your TV through a wall on that goal.
I have to be fair. I don't think Enzo Capetti had a lot of knowledge about what he did in that goal other than jump.
he put the defender off.
Yeah,
he got a piece to that ball. Like, he is involved in that play. I agree. He probably doesn't exactly know where that ball is going, but at the end of the day, it goes down as an assist.
It does. Yeah, absolutely. I think we can all agree, masterclass by all three of those players for that goal. And yes. Also, you know, sarcasm aside, it does showcase what Bill Tuiloma is good at, which is his ability to get those balls out over the top to a position where they can be dangerous. So
I actually think it showcases what all three of those players are really good at. Bill with his long passing. Enzo, even though he's not truly winning that ball, he's being a pest to that defender. And he is making it so that that defender can't easily send that ball where he wants to. And then Kerwin Vargas, we've talked about it all the time. He has a magical right foot. He really, really does. And that is a difficult finish.
I'm gonna don't know why I put this on a different part of the schedule, so I'm gonna do it now. We're gonna give our flowers to Kerwin Vargas. What a game. Mm-hmm. What, like, that was a standout performance among standout performances, and the only reason he is not man of the match is because Leo Lavada was somehow better. I mean, I want to be clear. This is a team we have discussed and talked about over and over again, saying, where is the winger threat coming from? Mm-hmm. Where is the danger coming from the outsides? Who's moving in from having chalk on their boots? And all of a sudden, in one game, it looks like we had the two best wingers in MLS. It was special. And I said this on the post-react. Kerwin Vargas warmed up like he had something to prove and like somebody told him to put his boot through that ball. And if you watched his warm-up, he was striking the ball so hard on shooting practice. One, he hit almost everything perfectly into the corners of the net in practice. Mm. But two, he had one that he just barely missed over the top. And the ball was still rising when it hit the blue Furia flag, like up by the first railing section, Jeez. Not the one right at the edge, like the set of rails. It was not on its way down. It was still going up. That's how hard he was putting his foot through it. Really, really nuts to watch, and really glad to see him show his personality like that. Anything particular you want to say when it comes to flowers for Kerwin Vargas?
Just that, you know, before we started recording, I mentioned not having had a chance to listen to the post-react as I was out of town this weekend, that I thought someone had told Kerwin to shoot, because it jumped out at me that he was constantly, especially early in that game, cutting in onto that right foot and getting a shot off. And I am a fan of more high percentage shots, I will say, but I am also someone who recognizes there are certain players where they have it. And Kerwin, if he is cutting in onto that right foot, I trust him to get a good cross in. I also trust him to put something dangerous onto goal, or there was a couple where, you know, there was one early on where it skidded just beyond the post, right? And so he's one of those players where I don't mind him shooting from potentially less than ideal positions, because I just think he consistently strikes that ball so well with that foot. And it's one of the reasons why I think getting Abada in, and again, we're going to talk about him, but him getting up and running so quickly is so important for this team, because Kerwin is a monster, I think, on the left. He's a good player on the right, but I think he can turn into a monster on the left if we can consistently employ him there.
Yeah, the last thing I'm going to say about Kerwin and giving him flowers, because this was a special game for him, he gets moved back over to the right by Dean Smith. And Dean Smith did confirm in the press conference that he did that because of the work rate of Kerwin Vargas and Kerwin's ability to defensively cover space.
And as a young player, that's important.
Yeah, this is a guy who is ticking the boxes of everything you want out of the best wingers you can find, and now is being trusted by Dean Smith to play both left and right. That's and is doing the defensive work at the 90th minute. That's a lot of really high praise for a very young man, and we just hope it keeps going up. Again, on the statement of extremes that we've now seen, Kerwin Vargas is the best player in the league and should never be anything other than the best left winger in the league. Let's talk about the best right winger in the league. And that's Liel Abada.
Yes.
Josh, I think my statement on Liel Abada is going to be, wow.
That's a good statement. That's all you need. That's all you need.
I'll be really honest with you. I had some concerns about Leah Labada that I tried to like hint at in previous podcasts and not like shy anybody away from him, but he's not a big guy. I didn't know how he's going to be able to handle the physicality of the MLS league, whether or not he was going to be able to take large spaces given to him and be dominant on that side.
Mm-hmm.
He's now been in America for like 12 days total. And he's coming off of an injury, and I swear to you, for the first 50 minutes of that game,
mm-hmm.
he looked like he was the first player at Charlotte FC that was genuinely a just completely different level of player.
Yeah. I was never quite as concerned with the height, because I actually think that you can look around this league and what you can find is a lot of guys who, talent-wise, I think would be in a different league, perhaps a better league, but because of their physical limitations, they're here. I look at a guy like Charles Heel up in New England, Lucho Acosta for Cincinnati, you know, more diminutive guys who physically maybe can't compete at different leagues, but here in MLS can. So I was never worried about that. I will say, so far, with the way he has come into this team, he has exceeded my expectations, because I agree with you. This was a game where I looked and I said, oh, that's what it's like to have one of these guys, to have a Cucho, to have a Hill, an Acosta, to have one of those guys where you look around and you say, that is the best player on the pitch right now. And we're not quite there yet. I mean, he had a really good game. In my opinion, we're not quite there yet to truly put him into the upper echelons, but the talent I think is obvious. And I think, if he's doing this in his, what, second, third game in the league, as you said, 12 days off the plane, man, it just gives you hope for what is this going to look like come June, July, August.
My statement here is, if those two people, if Kerwin Vargas and Leah Labada, can bring the same level of dynamism and threat and vigor to every match at Charlotte FC, if that's the floor, we're going to win. Yeah. And I don't mean we're going to win like matches here and there. I mean, this is going to be a winning team. Mm-hmm. What we saw on those two wings is an effective, killer, MLS winning potential wing setup. And I don't remember the last time I thought anything near that was going to be at Charlotte FC.
Well, because I think in for the past few years, we've had guys who, I'm not sure you could question the base talent, but the production just wasn't there. And both of these guys, we've gotten production from Kerwin, and you know, Abada's history of production with Celtic is very, very good. And again, he already has a goal now for us. Should have had two in this game. We'll get on to that, I'm sure. But I think you're right. I think what this shows is that I would be very curious to know how much attention Kerwin had been getting, and whether part of why we're seeing that, what we saw this past game, is because now we have two truly dynamic wingers where you can't sort of shade to one side, so to speak.
Yeah, we have threat on all sides and must be respected on all sides. I want to just briefly jump in before we talk about the goal that wasn't and the goal that was, and say, to my knowledge, Josh, this is the first time in Charlotte FC history that a right winger, a left winger, and a central striker have all scored in the same game. Can you think of another match?
Oh.
The only times we have even scored more than three goals or more, I mean, one of them is the Daniel Rios.
Yeah, score. Which I do believe that one of Ujwiak or Gaines scored in that game too, right? Or was that a different?
I thought they were all Daniel Rios, because that was
maybe
the 4-0,
they were all Daniel Rios,
and they were all.
I think
Daniel
there was Rios. Another game where Rios scored, and maybe they contributed. I off the top of my head, no, I'm not able to think of where our front three all had a goal.
Yeah, I think that this is the first time I have seen that from Charlotte FC, well, which amazing.
Well, not only that, but I mean, when you think there's just not much to complain about. I think with the attackers from this past game, you have Vargas who gets a goal, Abada who gets a goal, Ajiman who gets a goal, Enzo gets an assist, Diagara gets an assist. That's another thing where I don't know that we've ever had an attacking, you know, that front four, so to speak, contribute so clearly to so many goals, right?
I think you could potentially take that statement and say, yes, but what about Scott Arfield, who was quite bad? But
I'm trying to stay positive for that, like, okay? Separate, yeah.
No, we'll go ahead. We'll go beyond that. I do think it's an interesting, fun tidbit, but let's talk about the Liel Labata non-goal. Mm-hmm. Ball goes over the top from, I believe it's Ashley Westwood. Is that correct?
I think so.
It's the ball, yeah. Ball goes over the top from Ashley Westwood. We run, what did you call it in basketball? A pick play?
A pick play. It's a pick play. It's a screener.
The people who watch the basketballs will know about that. either way, we use human beings as blockers.
Yes.
So that someone can run free. This is not new in soccer. They do it in the Premier League all the time. There is absolutely no foul committed.
Nope.
Liel Labata should have a goal. Josh, do you see it any other way?
This non-goal had me furious. Because no, this is, unless you are saying that the pick play is not allowed in soccer, and if that is the case, then I am very confused because I have not heard of that. Unless that is not allowed, this goal should have stood. There is no foul worthy in this buildup to call this goal off. What I always look at when goals are scored is I always sort of look at the opposing team. And you can tell a lot by how the opposing players react to a goal. Do they have their hands up for offside? Are they yelling at the ref? Are they, you know, holding their ankle trying to say that they got hurt in the buildup play? Whatever. That didn't happen with Toronto. Toronto players are yelling at each other because they're angry about this goal. And I think that tells you all that whoever it was, it's very unclear. Even the announcers didn't know if they're calling this foul on Scott Arfield or on Bill Tuiloma. Doesn't matter because neither of the players who are quote unquote fouled potentially look angry, have done anything, have fallen over. This is a goal that I think everyone thought should stand. And I think even if you were to give some true serum to those Toronto players, I think even they would say that this is a goal that should have stood. It makes no sense to me why this was called off, and it should have been 2-1 at this point. And who knows how or if that changes the game, but definitely changes a little bit of the end game for us.
I think that my final statement on this is it is a miscarriage of justice in a football sense. Yes. It should have been a goal. Liel Labata, with all of the class that we now know he has and will always play this well, there will never be any dip in form from here.
This is base.
Yeah, this is base. It says, hold my beer. And you didn't like that one. That's fine. I'll do it again. Ball comes up from who does send that ball in?
This is
when he makes entirely of his own.
He picks it up off of a Toronto misplaced pass.
Yeah, for some reason my brain is thinking about how the ball got delivered on our third goal instead of the Liel Labata one. Liel does this all for himself. Says hold my beer, takes the ball for himself, runs in, scores into the far post low, which we know Dean Smith will have liked, and runs to the sideline and says, try and stop me for that one, ref. Like, rips his shirt off. Great abs, by the way.
Yeah, as I said on Twitter, I don't know what was better, the goal being scored or us being able to see him without his shirt. I'm still undecided on that.
Yeah, I think Christian Kolina finally might have, like, somebody threatening his, like, handsome man post as MVP at Charlotte FC. We'll see what the ladies of Charlotte FC fandom, you know, come out with. I'm sure there's going to be a vote eventually for who the true hero is.
We'll see what the gentlemen say too. I want in on that vote.
You want in on that vote? My statement on Abada's goal is that it's brilliant. I loved seeing it. I love the drive from the player. That's everything I expected from Enzo Capetti. That was, in my brain, the goal I was looking for Enzo Capetti to go score, and he went and just did it inside of 90 minutes of being on the pitch. He has his first goal. The monkey's off his back. But good for him. Long may it continue. Anything else on that one before we start blaming people?
I think it was just such a confident finish. That's what I took away from it, right? He takes it, I think, a little bit earlier than maybe anyone is expecting. And the way he hits it, it's not hit super hard. It's not, you know, a crazily hit ball. It's just someone going, I'm going to put the ball in the back of the net, and I'm going to do it by putting it right there. And then he goes and does it. And that's something, man, I don't know that we've had a player who looks as assured, I think, as confident. Or and that might be a little bit of early seasonness for me on that, but there does just seem to be a little bit something different about the way he goes at the goal, I think.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and we're going to change things up a little bit here. First and foremost, I would like to say thank you so much to our sponsors. DraftKings is helping to support us, so the wait is over. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR, is now live in North Carolina. Now you can legally bet on all your favorite sports anytime, anywhere, right here in North Carolina with DraftKings. For a limited time, new customers who sign up with promo code QCPN and bet $5 will receive $200 instantly in bonus bets. DraftKings has the best features, including same-game parlays, player props, and more with fast and easy payouts right at your fingertips. Now, we are about to be playing Minnesota. So some of the numbers you might be interested in that is that Charlotte is minus 105, a draw is plus 250, and Minnesota is plus 250. Perhaps useful information for you. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now using code QCPN and bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code QCPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 877-18-5543. Or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is used under license. I'm killing it, Josh. I really think I am. I think I'm getting good.
Best one yet.
Best one yet. Just like Charlotte FC scoring all of the goals. And now, instead of talking directly about Charlotte FC scoring those goals, let's talk about one that went against us, their second goal, and who's to blame for it. Josh, in the interest of the extremism that we have shown in this particular episode, everyone's to blame. They're all terrible. Get them off my pitch.
Yes, exactly. No, the real answer is, of course, Bill Tuiloma.
Wait, so in serious mode, do you want to go serious on this one first, or do you want me to?
I will go serious on this one first.
All right.
If I'm going to assign blame to any one player, right? If I'm going to dole out the most blame, for me, it is Jabril Diani. This move starts when Bernadeschi is able to just skip past Diani on the sideline. For me, I need Diani to, one, if he's going into the tackle the way he does, needs to either get the ball or get the man. Ideally, he gets the ball, but if he doesn't get the ball, he needs to bring down Bernadeschi and he needs to take the yellow on that play. Because what I cannot have is I cannot have him running at the back line the way he does. He has a full head of steam. He is a very tricky player. I don't really blame Urinen for not being able to sort of deal with him on that run, because you kind of don't know where he's going. You kind of figure he's going to cut in at some point, but you don't know when. I do, again, want to give flowers to Kerwin Vargas. He gets back and almost puts off Bernadeschi and almost gets the ball and stops this. But for me, this all begins with Diani not getting the ball and then not getting the man. And, you know, cynicism in football, it's a big talking point. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Whatever you want to say about it, the best teams do it. And in that moment, we needed a little bit of cynicism to say, I'll take a yellow right now. You're not running at my defense.
Yeah, I just want to jump in really quickly on this one because I totally agree with you. The truth is, anything that can give you a competitive advantage at the best, at the highest levels in the world, you do. And some people may not love that it's directly in the spirit of the game, but you're right. All of the best winning teams in the world do it. Why? Because it gives you a competitive advantage. There's a player named Matteo Guendouzi who had a particularly hilarious one in the Premier League where a player got by him and he acknowledged rightly that that was the one person he couldn't let by. And he literally jumped on that player's back like he was a backpack and just rode them to the ground like he was their backpack. And it looked ridiculous. But you know what? He got his yellow card. The transition was stopped and they didn't score. There is one person on that Toronto team who you cannot let go. It's Bernadeschi.
Yep.
And you're right. I do not think you can let him go, even if you have to jump on that guy's back and pretend to be a backpack for a little bit. you take your yellow card, you nod at the coach who will go, well done, son, and you move on with the game.
Yeah, I really don't think that Dean Smith would have an issue with a poor challenge, right? Not getting the ball. But at the end of the day, he's going, again, when we talk about decisions in those moments, I don't think that he would have an issue with him being like, I didn't get the ball, but I got the man. Because I think that this is also like the 77th, 78th minute of the game too. So the clock's running out. You just can't let it happen, in my opinion.
So I do want to talk about the stuff that happens a little bit closer to the goal. I think Jalen Lindsey does a really good job. The ball is deflected off of his foot to go back across. I think a lot of people are going to give Bill Tuiloma flack because he looks like Bill Tuiloma is allowing them to be in an offside position or an advantageous position. But when watching it back in replay, Bill actually does a really good job. He is the last man back, but he does a good job of resetting the line. And when that ball goes past him, in my opinion, the way they move looks like he has been told to play his zone. He moves to his zone. I don't have any issue with any of that. He is in line when it happens. The ball goes over him. And if I have any issues, they're probably with Andrew Privet and Yedi Ugonen, who are not back in that line in time. Yet I have a little bit more patience with, but Andrew Privet is a starting center back and he had time to get there. If you go back and you look at the replay, he has time to get in position. He has time to be there to at least present trouble when that ball fortunately bounces to the other team. He's not there. They get the lucky bounce. And instead of it being a lucky bounce to somebody who has to make a spectacular play, it's a lucky bounce to someone who is wide open and has all the time they want to slot it home. So a little bit of minor frustration, but I would call that minor. It would have required that weird skip to get to the position it did. Mm-hmm. So you can understand how defenders would say, the odds of that happening are next to nothing. I think for me, it's a little bit about effort that I didn't see from Yedi and from Andrew Privet that 2% effort to get back into the line. Any final thoughts on that?
I think just we've talked a lot about how good or how solid defensively this team has looked this year so far. To be honest with you, walking away from this game, I don't know that I've changed my mind on that very much, because I think that there's a real argument to be made that Toronto got an assist on each of these goals from deflection, right? Like, Both of these goals happen when one of our players is in position and gets something on the ball. And that sometimes happens, right? Deflections, we're going to have some goals that are scored that way. They had it in this game. I think we look really solidly defensively still. There are some things to clean up like they're always going to be. But again, I walked away saying not really being worried that we allowed two goals to a team, not in the same way that I would have been last year, to be honest with you. Although I guess last year, if we had only allowed two goals, I might have actually been happy with that. So
let's go ahead and let's talk the final goal we score. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful ball from Jalen Lindsey, mm-hmm. who has someone closing him down and has the wherewithal and the presence to know where the space is, where his man is, and Brecht sees the space. I think when Brecht came into the game and Scott Arfield went out, it was like, oh, yeah, there's the original. Brecht, very good. It's a beautiful ball up to him. It's a fantastic ball from Brecht into the center. And I think that we see a little bit of a difference in Patrick Ojemong versus Enzo Capetti in this, where if you look back, I want to say it's in the last game, it is Jalen Lindsey who puts in that beautiful curling ball for Enzo, and he just can't quite reach it. Mm. It's effectively the exact same ball. And Patrick Ojemong reaches it. Now, this isn't a super high XG chance. It's not like Pat, you know, created a 0.8 XG chance out of this. It's a low XG chance that he reaches and happens to score. But that has kind of summed up the feeling for me between Enzo and Pat, is that Pat just has that extra 5% brain towards scoring. And he gets to those balls and he gets to those chances. And you know what? He doesn't create them all, but he goes and he gets chances. And I got to admit, I don't want to go into the whole Enzo thing right now, but Patrick Ojemong felt to me at the beginning of the season like someone who was regularly hitting his ceiling of talent. And right now he looks to me like someone who, if you can control the game lower in the field without Enzo Capetti, he is going to get you more chances and he is going to finish more of them.
I'm personally not quite there yet. I am also an avowed Enzo defender. What I will say is some of the things I think you say are true. I think some of them are true just because Patrick is a big guy, right? Like some of these balls that he can get to, it's just because he's a big guy. That's not to take away from him. He's using his body. This is one of those goals where I don't know that Enzo scores it because I don't know that Enzo has the size to sort of fight off the two defenders in that situation. I still have issues with the other aspects of Ojemong's game, but Enzo very much feels like the Ujwiak thing. So
can I just very quickly point out his hold-up play is questionable and needs work?
Yes. I was just going to say, and again, not to go too far into the Enzo thing, but Enzo very much feels like the Ujwiak thing to me, where I see it. I see what he can do, and I feel like he's been unlucky. This is Enzo. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's been unlucky. But at a certain point, I do think you start to wonder, is it luck or is it talent or is it finishing? Is it skill? Whatever you want to call it, right? And so I think Ojemong, regardless, has a really big opportunity here because Enzo has not solidified himself in this team. And that, and for a young player to potentially work his way into more minutes, I think that this is a really important moment for him.
Yeah. I think this is very well done. You know, Pat becomes the first Charlotte FC player to hit multiple goals. Hopefully, would have been nice if Liel Abada had done that first. But Pat comes in, does it. I think that we have now seen how this front line can attack. It's a great play all around. There's a part of me that really wants to go into some like interesting stuff around how having two wingers that are really good at coming in the space behind a drop off actual false nine could make Enzo Capetti like really, really valuable. But we don't have that time right now. So maybe we do that as a special episode, or maybe I just record my psychotic ramblings of football tactics. Either way, if that's going to happen, we'll make it a Patreon thing.
Logan coming to you live from his basement ranting about false nines.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, now that we have someone who can come in off of the right side, we experience the gravitational shift. No, okay. Let's say flowers to Pat, well done, and let's go ahead and look at the match where Patrick Ojemong and Liel Abada and Kerwin Vargas and, you know, what the heck, just for the fun of it, Scott Arfield are all going to score another goal, and that is against Minnesota. Josh, tell us about what's coming up.
Yeah, so Minnesota is currently seventh in the West on 11 points. 10 goals for them, 9 goals allowed. Their 10 goals are coming off a 10.7 XG. Their 9 goals allowed are off of 11.8 XGA. I don't see anything in those numbers to say that they've been lucky or unlucky. They're mostly playing a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, depending on sort of how you view it. I think that they're an okay team. They've had a bit of a roller coaster up and down as far as performances go the last few years. It looks like they might be on that similar level again this year. Again, they're a decent team. I think that they're a team, especially coming to Charlotte, that we should be favored to win. And I think that we should want to get all 3 points in this game. When I look at them, there are sort of three players that stood out to me. First is Timo Pukki. Premier League fans will probably recognize him from his time in Norwich. 34 years old though now, so he is on the downside of his career. He was a prolific goal scorer at the championship level. He was decent at the Premier League level, and he's been decent for MLS. He has 2 goals this year, 10 last year. He is a veteran guy who will get into good spots on the field. He's someone you have to be on the lookout for. However, the guy who really jumps out to me is a guy named Robin Laud, I think his name is. I'm not completely sure. He's Finnish. I apologize to any of our Finnish listeners out there if I'm mispronouncing it. Please let me know how it's pronounced. Laud is a 31-year-old midfielder who can score and assist. He's played for Minnesota for 6 seasons now. He has 24 goals and 13 assists. He already has 2 goals and 3 assists this year. Really dangerous passer, really good carrier of the ball. He's one of those midfielders that I think has kind of historically given Charlotte some issues where they can make runs into our defense from the midfield. And so that does worry me a little bit. He tends to prefer the right side of the pitch a little bit. So that with the way we were set up last time, I guess that would probably be Diani's side potentially again from the midfield. So just someone to look out for that I'm sure a lot of us haven't heard of, but I think is just a really good player.
Yeah.
Now.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, now, Logan, you always ask me, how can we win? How can we beat them? And that is the third player that I want to bring up, who is their goalkeeper, Dane St. Clair. He is a 26-year-old goalkeeper. It's third year starting. He's been up and down. One of the numbers I always look at for goalkeepers is a number called PSXG plus or minus. Basically, are you saving more than you should, or are you allowing more than you should? His first year starting, he was plus 6.9. Amazing. Last year, negative 2.3. This year, plus 0.5. Up and down for him. So what is he? I don't know, but what I can tell you is if you have issues, Logan, with Kalina controlling his box, you would absolutely despise Dane St. Clair. This year, he has stopped, according to FBref, 0.0% of crosses into his penalty area.
Woof.
Not only that, this is not a new thing. Minnesota as a team last year was last in MLS in crosses stopped. Dane himself was at 1.6%. In 2022, the team was fourth. Dane was 2.3%. Just for reference, Kalina's been at 6.3%, 5.2%, and 3.4% this year. This is a guy who does not come and get crosses.
So what you're saying is that a freakishly tall, athletic goal scorer could potentially find a lot of joy in this match.
Could potentially. What I'm also saying is that Charlotte get in crosses. Charlotte is currently fifth in the league with crosses into the penalty area and sixth in total crosses.
So what I'm hearing is that we're actually going to play Kerwin Vargas on the left, Liel Abad on the right. We're going to play Patrick Ajimong as the striker, and then we're going to play Yuri Tovarsh at the 10. Because heck, like, we're not trying to make any dagger balls. We're just throwing it out to the wings and letting them hit the two tall guys.
I'm saying that that could be a truly viable option in this game, because what the numbers show is that they don't stop crosses. At least this goalkeeper doesn't. And we like to do it. So if there is a game where Ajimong, where you might actually look at it and really do and say Ajimong should be starting over Enzo Capetti, I see a very good argument in this game, because I do think that this is a real way to attack this team. You don't just want to throw balls willy-nilly into there, but this goalkeeper has a history of just simply, for whatever reason, whether this is a skill issue, whether this is the way that team sets up, I can't say for certain, but it's very clear that this is not a strength of his, and this is something that we've liked to do so far this year, so that would be something I would anticipate seeing a lot of this game.
I like knowing there's a clear inroad. I'm not going to lie. That makes me feel a little bit better. Let's go ahead and we will begin to wrap it up here. Josh, you have first honors. What is your prediction for Charlotte versus Minnesota?
2-0 Charlotte.
Ooh, strong. I am going to say my prediction will be a 3-1, because I also think that we're going to win by 2, but I want us to score more goals. So I guess I just have to pick that. I'm going to go 3-1. Either way, we're both pretty optimistic, and we hope you at home are optimistic as well, because that's what this is all about, is having fun and loving your team. Josh, any final thoughts from you?
No, just that this is a game we should win.
Amazing. To you out there, if you have decided to spend your time with us, we love you. Thank you so much. We will talk to you soon. In fact, we will talk to you again over on the Patreon side when we go and take our next 3 points from Minnesota. Goodbye.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.